Avengers Spotlight.
Guys, welcome back to, I guess this is going to be a super very special episode. It's going to be a joint production special episode. And if you're a longtime listener of Back to the Bins Avengers Spotlight, then you're in the right spot. And if you're a longtime listener of Fan Holes, Justice Not Entirely Dissimilar to Lightning, a Thunderbolts podcast, you are also in the correct spot because we have grouped together to discuss a 12-issue maxi-series that was too big for both of the podcasts. And we're going to be discussing the epic miniseries Avengers Forever. And we're going to be doing it in chunks because it's so epic we can't do it all in one sitting. But I have a select number of gentlemen with me on the call tonight. I've got Paul Spataro and Bill Robinson from Avengers Spotlight on the call. Why don't you gentlemen say hi to everybody?
Hi, everybody.
Hi to everybody.
And I'm super thrilled that we could do this with Paul and Bill. I actually had this dream since I was a very, very tiny, small little kid podcaster that, you know, you guys talk about Avengers Forever a lot. And I was like, you know, we're doing this because, and if you've never listened to our show, I also have my good pal who is the originator of our Thunderbolts podcast, Michael, on the line. Say what's up to everybody.
What's up, everybody?
Yeah, and Mike came up with this idea. He loves the Thunderbolts, and he always wanted to do a chronological coverage of the Thunderbolts. And I was the one who was kind of like, well, how can I make this interesting for myself? And so I basically said, well, can we do a historical segment on the back half of it so we can talk about, you know, classic Marvel comics? And he said, sure, that sounds awesome. And occasionally I wrangle him into, well, we can't do 12 issues of Avengers Forever in a giant back half of a podcast. So sometimes I twist his arm and we do these special podcast episodes where we're covering like a larger story. And this certainly qualifies as one of them. And so there's a lot of connection to both Avengers history and certainly Thunderbolts history in this. But I figured what we do is, this is, you know, the game plan is we're going to cover 3 issues a show, hopefully, and we'll do it issue by issue, and then, you know, we'll continue doing that until hopefully we, you know, conclude the coverage of the entire maxi series. But I guess just to get started, we'll kick it off with Avengers Forever number 1, if everybody's cool with that. And the publisher, of course, is Marvel Comics. The cover date is December 1998, but the on sale date is October 21st, 1998. The cover price is a whopping $2.99. The writer is Kurt Busiek. The penciler is Carlos Pacheco. The inker is Jesus Moreno. The letterer, Richard Starkings. And comic crafts, Albert Deschene. The colorist is Steve Olaf. The editor is Tom Brevoort. And then we've got the cover credits with the penciler, Carlos Pacheco, and the inker, George Perez. Prologue. In the 26th century, a Centurion rebel uprising of 12 warriors is quelled by Johns Rickard, commander of the Galactic Avenger Battalion. Comprising a legion of hammer troopers, repulsor troopers, shieldsmen, and microswarm, they lay waste to 17% of the planet's surface and execute 34% of the planet's population in retaliation for the uprising. 3 mysterious alien beings appear out of nowhere to witness the display of power from the Terran Empire, and they declare that steps must be taken and disappear just as quickly. The current day Avengers, Iron Man, Captain America, Giant Man, Firestar, Justice, and Scarlet Witch deliver their longtime ally, Rick Jones.
Bitch. And that is my one contractual Rick Jones bitch for the show.
To the blue area of the moon. Recounting Jones's history as the boy who brought the original Avengers together with a radio alert, and most importantly, his role in bringing an end to the Kree-Skrull War using the enigmatic Destiny Force. Rick is not only recently paralyzed from his days running with the Incredible Hulk, but suffers from a bizarre bio-decay of his cellular structure, reminiscent of that very same Destiny Force energy that even Hank Pym, the Beast, and Iron Man cannot cure him from. The Avengers' only means of recourse is to look to the Kree Supreme Intelligence, now a POW, held in S.H.I.E.L.D. holding facility on the blue area of the moon for answers. The Avengers are forced to leave Jones in the care of the Supremor for the next 24 hours. Once they have left his holding cell, a tall, robed man enters the Supreme Intelligence's cell and questions why he has agreed to help him. The Supremor tells the robed man it is simply curiosity, and the means to witness another species' evolutionary threshold can only give him more data to pursue the goal for his own Kree people. The robed man then disappears, leaving the Supremor with Rick Jones. Meanwhile, in the realm of Limbo sits Immortus, the master and guardian of the last 70 centuries of time. Immortus stops time on the blue area of the moon and sends his ice warrior, Tempest, to drain Rick Jones. Of all of his life force. However, Tempest's efforts are quickly countermanded by the appearance of a time sphere containing none other than Kang the Conqueror. Kang defies Immortus' decree that Jones must die and slays Tempest instead. However, from the shards of Tempest's icy corpse come a vast army of time-displaced warriors at Immortus' command. Kang summons blasters from his temporal armory and engages Immortus' time army raging against impossible odds. In the chaos, Jones finally awakens so that the Supreme Intelligence and the robed man can jumpstart the Destiny Force powers within the young man to gather a team of time-displaced Avengers. Present-day Giant Man and the Wasp, Yellowjacket from his mentally disturbed era, Hawkeye from the post-Kree Skrull War era, Songbird and Jennifer, Captain Marvel from a future era of the Avengers, and Captain America, a demoralized version from a post-Secret Empire era. Next issue, Avengers Assemble. So yeah, this is what kicks us off. I mean, it's basically kind of an introductory issue. I don't know if you guys want to start with talking about how there are two covers to this and maybe what you guys think of them.
The main cover with Rick Jones with the hot tuna tank top on. It just seems like a strange choice to me. I like the images of all the floating heads in the background, and it, you know, gives you a clue that, you know, the people who are ultimately on the team are all there, but it doesn't let you know who's going to, you know, be the team that's set forth. It really doesn't give you much of a clue as to what's going to happen other than the fact that Rick Jones is going to be a pivotal part of it. I picked this up off the stand, well, not off the stands, but from the comic store when it came out. But I don't have any recollection as to what my mindset was. I think it was just, you know, okay, it's an Avengers book, so I'm getting it. I don't think it was something where I saw it and got excited about it at all. In fact, looking back on it now, I don't think I did any more than peruse this at the time. I don't think I ever sat down and actually read it. When this came out, I had a one-year-old, so I was pretty busy. The backup cover with Kang looking pensive and kind of walking away from the reader or walking to the side, that seems more dramatic, but I don't know if it would be more likely to pull in an audience.
Yeah, it's interesting because that Kang one, I almost feel like it's got a Crisis on Infinite Earths vibe with like all the different, you know, Earths like in the background or whatever. And I was trying to figure out like why there were variant covers, like, because it's, I guess we'll end up talking about it later. But for these three issues, this is the only instance where there's like an alternate cover. And this is kind of early. I mean, you know, you can point to like, I don't know, examples like there was like the JLI Bwahaha era where there, like the third issue of that had like a variant cover with like a different DC logo and cover and things like that that was being tried out. Or like, I think there was like some kind of Firestorm cover, but that's like, you know, back in the 80s, and it wasn't, I don't know, it's not like it is today where variant covers are basically a staple of the industry and they're just to generate money, right? Like, I mean, that's basically what they're for now. When this is like somewhere in between that era where where they're figuring out that maybe it can generate money. And like that cover is listed as like the Westfield exclusive alternate cover. So I imagine if you bought a bunch of copies of Avengers Forever from Westfield, you would wind up with a certain amount of variants that had Kang on them or whatever. But other than that, I don't know much of the historical reasoning behind why that was done and why later issues of this maxi series would have variant covers. I mean, I would just say, like, I feel like that Rick Jones thing is just indicative of maybe, you know, some of Peter David's snark and witticism coming through, you know, that it was a character that was kind of shepherded and owned by him so long in the Hulk titles and then would go on to be sort of his character with the Captain Marvel series. Like, I think there's some kind of, I don't know, for me, there's some kind of through line in that, you know, the way he's dressed, the hot tuna tank top or whatever it is, like that whole thing. And then I guess what you're saying, the interesting thing is maybe you're supposed to wonder, like, of the vast number of Avengers heads on the cover, like which Avengers are going to make the cut for this, you know, this series or this team, and you know, what is it all going to be about, basically. But what about you, Mike? What do you think of these covers?
I like both of them, but the thing about the Rick Jones cover that made me laugh was that my eye was immediately drawn to the upper left corner where I saw Heroes Reborn Hawkeye, and I was like, I think that's it, that's got to be him, right? Like upper left, like that's Heroes Reborn Hawkeye, right? Like, yeah, that's not like...
Oh, I see. Or is it... Well, yeah, maybe. I don't know.
Like, no, I was like...
I think that's a Jack of Hearts behind the A.
He's talking about on where Busick and Pacheco, like where all the there. Credits are. Right?
Yeah. Unless that's D-Man.
Yeah, right next to the Hulk, yeah. Like,
it's hard to tell for sure. And who is that below that?
Speedball alone? I think that's Speedball.
Or Mr. Immortal, maybe?
Yeah, Mr. Immortal. Yeah.
That could be.
But it was funny because, like, my eye was drawn to him, and I was like, where's the real Hawkeye? And then I was like, oh, he's all the way down by, like, Rick Jones's left knee. Like, I was like, oh, there he is. So, like, there's the H. Like, okay. But I just thought that was funny that he was, like, so. I was like, ugh, the brown plant man looking Hawkeye. Like, why is he all the way up there? Like,
I wonder. I mean, maybe this would have had the capacity to go that far reaching if they really wanted it to. But you know, I guess it's, you know, or at least that was available to them.
But
you know?
But no. But in general, yeah. Like, I like both covers, and like I wanted to ask you guys because, like, I assume all you guys, like, I didn't read this like in the wild. I didn't read it until like years later, and like so you guys didn't know who the team was going to be like when this first came out.
No. I'm trying to remember if there were like promotional articles that spoiled this for me. Like, I'm gonna be honest, I think I read this after I started reading the ongoing Captain Marvel book and then backtracked these, so I think I had some notion of what this was about and what the team dynamic was gonna be, because I remember getting like I think Wizard had like one of those promotional Captain Marvel zeros in it, and I just, you know, really liked the concept and started following the book regularly. And if I recall, it wasn't, you know, this launched that book. So it wasn't too hard for me to quickly go back and be like, what's still on the stands? And then, you know, pick up whatever back issues I needed to fill it out.
Yeah, I think I was getting this when it came out because we've had maybe a 1.5 or 2 year old, and my wife was pregnant, I think, with my second daughter. And I kind of remember getting this as it was coming out. Something else about the front cover, I think there's a couple people on here that are not Avengers, or I don't remember, because isn't that Madam Mask next to Captain?
I was just going to say, I could pretty much guarantee you Madam Mask has never been an Avenger to our knowledge.
There may be.
But that's part of the, I think, the allure of the story ultimately is that it's going from all different timelines, and perhaps in some timeline, Madam Mask is an Avenger.
Yeah, because we got Deathlok over there in the bottom. Right.
Oh, you know what? I know who that is. That is Madam Mask, but it's like a clone of her that was temporarily like a ally of the Avengers during like the Crossing, I think.
Oh.
Yeah, like a very, very limited and small.
Hold on a second. I need to go throw up for a second.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, I was about to, like, mitigate it. I was like, it was a very, like, limited span of time that she was considered an Avengers ally, at least. So
we don't speak of this.
And then
crossing
to the right of Hank and Songbird, is that Rage?
Yeah, that does look like the new Warriors version of Rage, at least.
Yeah, yep, could be.
Yeah, some interesting choices here. And then just next to Rick Jones' right leg, is that the High Evolutionary?
No, isn't that the Swordsman? Kind of? Maybe?
Is it?
I don't remember a fin on his head, unless that's...
I can't tell.
Yeah, I would guess maybe that's the Swordsman without his mustache or something. Or it could be like the original Captain Marvel, like the Kree soldier.
Oh, yeah. You know?
Definitely some interesting choices on the cover. Sorry. I've heard some people who were not in the know when this came out thought that it was just going to be a kind of a synopsis or a review of the Avengers, you know, their history to date, 12 issues, kind of synopsizing their whole history, which this cover would actually make sense, except why Rick Jones would be in a wheelchair on the front of it, I don't know. But all the faces would make sense.
I mean, if maybe they thought he was going to be sitting there after his injury with the Hulk and like chronicling his life and times and then chronicling the Avengers history or something, like, because it's interesting that you mentioned that, because I mean, this could have been like, I don't know, like JLA year one or something. You know what I mean? Like where it went through like the different incarnations or the early incarnation of the, you know, the Justice League where you've got. I mean, they've certainly done series like that following this or whatever. I think the fact that it's such a variety of timelines and obscura, even on the heads on the cover, right, might, if you actually sat down and looked at it, it kind of leads you to believe it's going to be something certainly that's full of deep cuts, if anything else, right?
Yeah, well, I think in later, if I remember correctly, because I haven't read ahead, or at least it was in the actual on stand ones, that like in the back towards, I want to say towards issue 4 or 5, they started to like cover, hey, back in issue 1 on the cover,
yep,
this person, yep, is here, and this person is here, and this person is shown on this panel and this page, and it starts to get all cross-referenced as to what all the appearances are.
It's funny because I guess I held this book in such high regard. Like, I felt like those source pages were at the back of every single issue. And like you're saying, more accurately, it's like every fourth issue, they start, you know, providing some coverage of that source material, basically. So like if you went through it, you know, and they go through page by page of, you know, what they're specifically referencing. And I just remember being so, I guess, in awe of that. Like, I always liked when there were books that did things like that, so that if you really wanted to, you could go out and get back issues or collections or find the stuff yourself. But then there were plenty of things that were already referenced in this, I think, because I had read, you know, certain Avengers stories, or I had Marvel Masterworks or whatever it was, that I think I was certainly a good target for this type of book.
Well, an interesting thing to kind of get into the prologue a little bit and jump into the last page of the prologue is that we have, I believe these are the Time Masters.
Yeah.
Who were featured in at the time frame, the What If mag. And then we will see these three, if anybody watched the Loki series on Disney, these characters appear there as well. But I won't spoil anything in case nobody's seen it.
I've seen the first season.
That, yep.
The first season, yeah, because they were at the end of the first season.
Yeah, that show did take a lot from this, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just trying to when I first, like, you know, when Derek suggested this, I was kind of trying to remember, when did I first read like Avengers Forever, like in general? And it was like, I think I had quit comics when it was coming out. And then I got back into comics largely because of the Dreamwave Transformers comics. And then I was like, oh, what's Marvel been up to? And then I like jumped into like Ultimate Spider-Man. And then like I heard, oh, like the Ultimate Spider-Man writer is going to be writing Avengers. Like, this is going to be great. And then I read Avengers Disassembled and I was like, oh, that was awful. Like, I got to go back and reread like all the Busick stuff I missed. And that's, I think that's when I tracked down this like Avengers Forever. So like I was trying to like chart my history with it. I tried to like I pulled the edition of the trade I have off my shelf, and it's like the 2002 printing of it. So like I was like looking on Amazon. I was like, I wonder what that goes for now. And it's still you can get a used copy for relatively cheap. But the funny part was like that made me feel old is that Amazon said you purchased this in 2003. I was like, I purchased this, like Amazon remembers that I purchased this like 21 years ago. Like, oh my God, like
they remember everything.
Uh-huh. Like, as far as this first issue goes, no, it's a great, like, you know, prologue. It's like, you know, it sets up the stakes. It, you know, it has a last page like wham, like, or well, you know, reveal of the actual team we're gonna be following. And yeah, like I mean, I generally think it's pretty awesome.
I mean, for me, I think I guess I've always liked the science fiction aspects of, you know, any comic universe, the Marvel comics being no exception. So I kind of liked seeing, you know, the Guardians of the Galaxy type references, the Kree-Skrull War, like all that kind of stuff. Like, I've always kind of been enamored with that aspect. I kind of like, I mean, you know, different strokes for different folks, but I really like the kind of cosmic in my superhero, you know, that kind of chocolate in my peanut butter, so to speak, or whatever. So like that part of it, I think, is great. I do really think that this brought Kang back to a certain level of prominence, or at least I mean, we can talk about it further, but I mean, you know, because he's in the entire run of this, but it was just one of those things where I really liked seeing the Kang that was kind of like a warrior. And I guess I was thinking about it when I was rereading it for the show. Like, to me, it's almost like the Kang aspect of him is like a Klingon warrior, but then he grows up to be like a Q or something as a Mortis, you know, and that's like anathema to the warrior side of him or whatever. And I you know, of course, me, I'm much more partial to the, you know, the Klingon warrior half than I would be to a kind of cosmic Q level gamester guy or whatever playing the long game. But like there's stuff in this I feel like sometimes Michael pointed out, but like this idea of these hammer troopers or repulsor troopers or shieldsmen or micro swarm or whatever, it's like it takes that notion of like these heroic images and turns them into this kind of like all amassing fascistic kind of army force or whatever, and sort of perverts the goodness of the characters. And it's like and there's something about that that's very I don't know if gut-wrenching is the right word, but like it turns what, you know, familiar imagery, like you're supposed to see Iron Man, Cap, Thor, you know, show up and you're supposed to be relieved, but in this case it's like they're basically like, you know, destroying this planet, right? And like those types of things.
These people don't even know they're being destroyed. That's the other horrible part.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're all in stasis. And then they bring them out of stasis after they've killed, you know, a certain percentage and devastated a certain percentage of the planet, you know? And it's like, whew, these people just wake up and people are, you know, one minute they were doing something and the next there's all this devastation and death. And it's really, really horrible.
And that kind of reminded me of at least the army version of it, like the hammer troopers or whatever, kind of reminded me of like when they did Hickman's Secret Wars and, you know, Doom had his like Thor Corps, right? And that basically they were his muscle, right? And it's like, you know, so it's like plenty of people have used these notions, you know, moving forward or whatever, but it doesn't make it any less, I don't know, impressive or it doesn't make you any less awestruck at what, you know, that like the, I don't know, the power at their command, or, you know, even seeing somebody like a Mortis, like, you know, pluck out his, you know, soldiers throughout the ages and seeing Kang fight hordes of all these different soldiers plucked through time. Like, I don't know, like just the concepts in this to me are very fun. And it's one of those things to me, like just reading this, it's very difficult for me, like as a quote unquote podcaster, like, you know, how you're like, you're supposed to take notes and like, you know, to come up with things to talk about and everything. It's like every time I read this thing, I can't take any notes. I just get sucked into it. You know, like I just get caught up in reading it, and I'm excited to read the next thing. So it's like I'm just kind of flying by the seat of my pants, like pointing out things that I noticed that I really, you know, enjoy in it and everything. Again, I guess to bury the lead, like you're not going to get any bad grades out of me on this miniseries for sure.
So the first thing that jumped out at me thematically, and it's at least through the first three issues that we read, is kind of the dual or even layered personalities that we're dealing with here. I mean, you have Kang and Immortus, who are both the same person and at different points in their lives. And, you know, I think of Immortus from the Madonna, Celestial Madonna story, where he was an ally to the Avengers and Kang was the big time villain in that one. And now we're flipping those roles just to show that they both do whatever their own goals are. And there is no good or bad as far as, well, they may be bad, but there is no purity in what either of them is doing. And then that's taken a step further with, you know, with the superhero team that's ultimately formed. But I think we can get into that when we get to the second issue a little bit more. But everybody on this team, I think with the exception of the Wasp, has like a very layered or dual personality going, at least at the point where they're chosen. So I found that to be like a theme that's running throughout at least those first three issues that was interesting to kind of take note of. As far as, you know, you mentioned that you're not going to get any low grades. I certainly am not going to give it any low grades. I would say that Pacheco's art style is not necessarily totally to my choosing. A lot of his facial expressions aren't exactly what I would want, but his storytelling and his layouts are outstanding. So I'm not saying, you know, I certainly wouldn't give them a bad grade, but it's the only area where I stylistically didn't care for a little bit of the rendering.
Yeah, I think that's fair to me. Like, if you want to say you don't prefer somebody's style, but you still recognize like the strength in the layouts and the storytelling, then that's, I mean, to me, that's, I can always say, okay, that I get where you're coming from, at least.
Like, the other thing about it that jumped out at me, just to give the second thought, was it is in the decompressed time, but there's so much going on that it doesn't feel decompressed. I mean, we didn't cover a lot of time in this, but there's a lot that goes on and it's a lot to take in as you're reading it. And, you know, clearly Busiek did not hold back on his words.
I feel like this is like the last of a, you know, because you talked about this is the beginnings of the decompressed era of storytelling, but it hasn't fully gone over. I mean, this is a complete story in and of itself, but it's, you could argue it's written to be consumed, you know, all in one sitting as well, right? In that decompressed style. But when you're talking about how dense the story is and how much there is going on in it, then that, I think you found where that style slowly, that seemed like a lost art or a dying art or an art that people weren't willing to put their time into if they can just get away with doing, you know, I don't know, chapter one of a six-part first issue, you know, if that makes sense.
I think Paul and I have brought this up before, that this is kind of this era, this time frame was kind of like the sweet spot between compressed storytelling and the Celestial Madonna saga, to where you had, you know, 12 panels on a page mostly filled with word balloons and you're like, okay, all right, I get it, you like to talk, okay, all right. And this is this is kind of right in the middle, whereas it, and one page I really like is when they're talking to the Supreme Intelligence and there's a shot to where, you know, he says, or watch the boy die. Make your choice. It matters little to me. And what we have is one picture of everybody, but there's a panel split on each person's face and it gives it a cinematic quality, like the camera is switching to each character. As it goes across, but it's all one picture, but it breaks it up so that you actually pause and you look at each one and it's almost like a movie. And then I like the next shot because, well, a shot like where Cap, you see Cap's finger pointing to the Supreme Intelligence and then you see his reflection where all the like back in the tank. And I just think that's a cool touch too.
Yeah, I think a lot of the stuff in here is super cool. I like how, like, when Kang is blowing away the guys on, I guess, you know, after Rick Jones is slowly coming to or whatever, and Immortus has his legion of army coming after him or whatever. Like, I almost felt like that kind of, I mean, I don't know that Kang necessarily had any of his cred stolen from him or whatever, but I feel like sometimes I'm kind of like, oh, you know, the the X characters often would get the most attention, you know, things like that. You know, some time travelers, you know, Bishop, Cable, like they would sort of be at the forefront of attention in terms of time traveling. But I feel like, oh, you know, this is Kang's moment to be like, hey, I can temporarily call up big guns too. You know, like I can play the big gun game with the best of them, you know. So, and I don't know, I just find that kind of fun.
Well, before we get the Avengers Forever team, also, do you notice that this is when Cap had lost his shield and he had the energy shield?
Yeah, because that's in that run of Avengers.
Actually, I thought it was in Captain America where it falls down into the, he was on a submarine and it falls out of his grasp and falls at the bottom of the ocean, and later
Mariner goes
and gets it for him.
Yeah, the second issue of Cap in that second Wade Garney run or whatever. But then, I mean, that obviously they carried that energy shield over into the run of Avengers. Like, I think we just covered like Avengers 12 on our show not too long ago, and he was still wielding the energy shield at that point. So
I was surprised that Immortus's minion was the guy that was from Lois and Clark, the time traveler, Tempest. Anybody get that?
No. That's, I mean, it's not my favorite.
How dumb was she?
It's not my favorite episode of Lois and Clark, but was that Peter Scolari?
No, it was not Peter Scolari, but I cannot remember the actor.
I forget who that
Something
was.
Lane?
Okay.
Lane Davies.
Didn't they like team up with H.G. Wells or something?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, H.G. Wells was the guy that played Bernie in Weekend at Bernie's.
Oh, yeah.
All right, we're getting off track. Stay on target.
I mean, do we have anything more on the first issue? Do we want to go on to the second issue?
Well, one thing I wanted to point out about, this is my own personal theory on time travel and why Kang doesn't listen to Immortus, because I've often had this discussion with people at work, and maybe I've had it with Paul, or you guys have heard me say it, is that if I went back to my younger self and told them, hey, dummy, you got to do this, or you got to stop eating that, or you're going to get diabetes, you got to worry about your health, I would be like, you know, past me would be like, that's your problem, future boy. I'm going to live my life the way I want to, and you have to deal with the consequences. So it's like almost like he's a teenager that doesn't want to listen to his father. Kang is like, no, I don't want to hear it. I'm not going to beat you. Screw you. I'm going to do what I want to do. Yeah.
Well, also, I feel like there's that layer for me. You're talking about, like, at least your past self believes you, but is just telling your future self to F off because that's future you's problem. Like,
exactly.
I think if I went and talked to my past self would be, the fuck you say? I don't believe anything you're telling me. Like, I don't. What do you mean I'm going to hate Star Wars? Like, get the fuck out of here, future self. You're talking
or you could tell your future self, you know, just by coming here you've created a splintered reality and none of this is going to happen, so go away. I
would be impressed if I even believed future me.
I'd be like, how did I get so fat?
I feel like, you know, they have so many variants of Kang, like over the course of, you know, Marvel history, it's like they're all like different characters basically. I mean, like Immortus Kang, like isn't the Young Avenger dude like Kang too? Like
Iron Lad. The Scarlet Centurion, like Rama Tut, and at one point they were like Nathaniel Richards, but then it wasn't, and Doctor Doom, but no, blah blah blah. Time travel.
Like, I mean, you line all these variants up, and it's like, is that you as a pharaoh? He was like, yeah, I went through a, you know, Egyptian phase, you know, like in my 20s.
The hidden robe figure. I kind of remembered who this was. I don't think I knew this the first time around. We can mention it when we get to the, because he's not revealed until the next issue. So we can save that discussion then. But when I was reading this, I was like, I remember who this is.
Remember.
Like, I was 99% sure, and I was correct.
Ladies and gentlemen, meet your Thunderbolts.
The Thunderbolts, are they the exciting new heroes the world needs?
Thunderbolts, strike!
Today makes at least half a dozen times the Thunderbolts have done the job we used to depend on the Avengers for.
It allowed us to move among you, disguising who we really are. The Masters of Evil!
In what is now becoming an old story, the Thunderbolts once again save the city.
Enough of this hero talk. You will do as you're told.
But...
He's right. You may be wearing a Songbird costume, but underneath you're just screaming me.
I can expose all of you right now. So you see, you really have no choice.
You know what? We're done playing these parts. It's time to live these parts.
No one betrays Zemo.
Figures, just when we go in on this hero thing, our blood runs out.
Avengers, Defenders, Thunderbolts, I make any team better.
We're Norman Osborn's A-team, and he's the big man in charge now.
This isn't the team I used to lead.
You, honey, are under arrest.
You have to fight for what's right every single day. Bulletproof skin or not.
The Thunderbolts have worked hard to change people's minds about us. But apparently, we've got a ways to go.
Justice, not entirely dissimilar to Lightning, a Thunderbolts podcast, now playing on fanholespodcast.blogspot.com.
All right, let's talk about the second issue then. So we've got Avengers Forever 2, still published by Marvel, that hasn't changed. The cover date, January 1999. The on-sale date, November 25th, 1998. Cover price, $2.99. The credits are mostly the same. Writer Kurt Busiek, Carlos Pacheco, Jesus Moreno, Richard Starkings, Comic Craft, Steve Olaf, Tom Brevoort. Title is Now is the Time for All Good Men. With time still frozen on the blue area of the moon, Kang implores the seven time-displaced Avengers to join him to save Rick Jones in the battle against Immortus's army. There is a brief moment of hesitation as both Kang and the Supreme Intelligence, who backs up Kang's claims, are both longtime enemies of the Avengers in any era. Captain America is looked to for a decisive decision, but this post-Secret Empire Cap isn't sure what to do. However, the Wasp quickly takes command and determines the best course of action is to help Kang save Rick and stop anyone else from getting killed. The Genis Vell, Captain Marvel, and Songbird comment that this moment must be the beginning of the Destiny War. While Kang and the Avengers fight back, Immortus's power encroaches on Kang's own time bubble. But Rick Jones has finally become accustomed to his Destiny Force powers and manages to drive Immortus and his army away. Kang announces to leave Immortus to him and that the Avengers should guard the Jones boy with their lives before he too departs. Jones and the team of Avengers begin to realize they are all from different eras of time, the past, the present, and even the future. The robed man makes his presence known to the Avengers, revealing himself as Gustav Brandt, also known as Libra, of the crime cartel Zodiac. With Kang gone, the Supreme Intelligence reminds the Avengers they are now vulnerable to Immortus' time freezes and convinces them to go with Libra. Libra's goals are more aligned with balance and knowledge than criminal enterprise, and has worked to influence this assembly of Guardian Avengers to protect Jones from Immortus. The Avengers, and again the crippled Rick Jones, get up to speed on exactly what eras they all hail from, and are now determined to take proactive action against Immortus by re-entering the time stream. Libra delivers the group to Kang's stronghold, Chronopolis, a realm that is partly in limbo and partly touches every era of human history. They arrive just as Immortus is launching his attack on the Central Citadel. Rick Jones facepalms himself in disbelief that their actions have just led them all into the hands of Immortus.
Don't stop.
Nowhere to run to. Yeah, so that is the second issue.
I really dig that cover. With like the team assembled, like, and all the sand falling on them, like, yeah, that's such a good concept. Like, and the poses especially are freaking great. Like, I think all the poses are really like full of character, like, you know, Hawkeye and like, you know, Genis Vell, like with like Sand's mouth, like, I think that looks really cool. Like,
I mean, even Yellow Jacket, you know, the thumb on his face and everything like that, the way that Jan is leaning into the, I guess, present day Giant Man's palm, you know, like you said, they all kind of have a certain character to them that they're presenting, I guess.
Yeah, I think it is a very cool cover, but I'm going to always be the voice of you.
No, I've got a couple.
If you look at Cap's face, Hawkeye's face, and even Giant Man's face, those are kind of the facial images that I was saying. I don't like the stylistic touches of that era, really. Okay. I think it's more the era than it is Pacheco. But the actual conceptualization of it, I think it's pretty cool with the sand. You know, it's pretty much to, you know, the days of our lives.
Yeah, you beat me too.
But The only thing about it, just from a point of view, Giant Man looks like his feet would go down another probably 5 feet lower than everybody else's, because he's very just upper body in the photo, which, considering his size, I think he'd be even taller if he was at the same level as all of them. But otherwise, I do agree with you. I like the fact that everybody's kind of shown a little bit of personality in it.
What if he's just sitting Indian style?
Could be. I don't think you're allowed to say that anymore.
I think they're on a dune, maybe.
Yeah, you're assuming they're but all Cap, on the same plane. He could just be sunk deeper into the sand because he's heavier.
Yeah, I guess so. But Cap looks very confident in the picture, and that is not the Cap of the era that we're getting. So that's the only thing about it, personality-wise, that I'm thinking might be an error.
Yeah, because we need a woozy, woozy Cap.
Ooh. Yeah, it's Schleppbrock Cap.
Schlepp Cap. Well, I don't know if I can be Cap in America anymore. I'm going to become Nomad.
But that's you know, just kind of goes to what I was saying, just the choice of the team. And I guess I'll talk about that for a moment. But, you know, you have Cap, who's ready to become Nomad. You have, you know, Songbird, who's been a villain and a hero. You have Hawkeye, who's also been a villain and a hero. And he's also been Goliath, and he's been Hawkeye. And he's at a point in his career where he just changed identities because he was Goliath during the Kree-Skrull War. You have Janice Vell, who's under the shadow of his father, who he never knew. And you actually have two Hank Pyms, which I think is a very cool choice.
Isn't one Hank Pym enough?
But if they had thrown it out to say, oh, pick the Avengers team, you know, I would imagine the four of us would have four different teams. Mm. And I just think it's kind of interesting to see the crew that they decided to put together for it. You know, the choice of having Cap be at the point where he's got his doubts and his personal crisis allows for Wasp to be the team leader, which is also kind of a dual thing, because at one point she was very, you know, written in a very mousy female way. And then eventually they allowed her to, you know, to blossom and become a much stronger character. So, you know, there's even a dual nature to her character.
Yeah, I mean, you could have easily done this with two Wasps and you would have had two completely different characters, right?
Well, what I like about it, too, is that Yellowjacket doesn't know that he's Hank.
Mm.
Oh, that's right.
Because this is Yellowjacket when he first appeared in Avengers.
Yeah, but she knew, but nobody else knew who he was. And he didn't let on. Because he was. Yeah, he was really messed up. Yeah, that was volume one.
Yes. Back. Yeah, the wedding was issue 60, if I remember right. And I think he had appeared two issues earlier.
Something like that, yeah.
And I really dig this team makeup just because it's full of characters I love. Like, the only character I don't really have, look, I don't hate him or anything, but I didn't read a series and I never really got a good handle on him was Janice Vell. Like, so, but like, you know, I love, you know, Cap, Hawkeye, Songbird, the Pyms and Wasp, basically. They're all like some of my favorite Avengers / you know, Marvel heroes. So like this, like, you know, reading this the first time, I was kind of like, oh, that's that, like, you know, there were, except for, like I said, and Janice fell, like I said, through no fault of his own. Like, I just didn't have a good handle on him at the time.
This is the introduction of Janice Vell with the cosmic look about him, isn't it?
Yep. Yeah, that's correct.
So that's another, like, cool thing that they did.
He came in, didn't he come in towards the tail end of the Silver Surfer?
He did, but he was known as Legacy, so he kind of had...
That's it, okay.
Like, I remember I would... this may only have relevance to Mike, but I remember I did all these, like, Dragon Ball Z Marvel mashups, and it was when I was really into Captain Marvel. So when it was Goku, he was paired with the original Captain Marvel, right? But then when I did the Great Saiyaman, it was paired with the Legacy outfit. And that's basically my opinion on that outfit, that it's like they're both kind of like goofball outfits or whatever. And then when he had this outfit, this sort of cosmic awareness, I thought that was super cool. So I paired that with like Mystic Gohan, which I also thought was super cool. And I don't know, it's weird. Like, I haven't gone back and reread that Captain Marvel book, and I don't even know if I want to. Like, I don't know if it was just for me, I guess I was a Wednesday warrior back then, and it was something that I bought because I liked it. And I think because Peter David was still kind of writing comics the way I remembered them to be written, and he wasn't completely gone over into this kind of new era of like just chuck out all the baby with the bathwater and start something fresh for new readers to jump onto kind of thing. And so I think I gravitated towards books like that were still being done that had some, I don't know, semblance of history to them. And then because this, that book sprang out of this, it made me go back and read this. So, I mean, I guess I would argue almost like this version of Captain Marvel in Avengers Forever is almost like a version unto himself. Like, because I don't know that, you know, I mean, I don't know if this is spoilers or whatever, but I don't know that they ever fully realize him to be the guy that's in this series, unfortunately, like because of the way things, you know, went down the line with that, you know, book and everything, and how they had to sort of like constantly relaunch it to sort of, I don't know, keep up with the Joneses and everything. And it, like that was part of that whole thing where they did the Marvel and the, that, I don't know, whatever that was, that one Dark Knight ripoff or whatever, when like Bill Gemmis and all those guys were like writing books and getting into contests and everything. I don't know. That just reminds me of like ugly stuff. And I think at least this version of the character, like, I guess I am fond of, especially the look and the fact that I guess I have fond memories of the character because I followed his book on a monthly basis and kind of stubbornly kept following it, even though they kept trying to like cancel and relaunch and rebrand. And I just wouldn't, I guess at that point I was like trying to be one of the faithful, like I wasn't going to abandon this character because I did like the character and the cosmic adventures and stuff.
Even if I wasn't too familiar with him, and I always, like, you know, I was mostly familiar. A steal like Melissa away from like Abe or whatever, but like even I was kind of like uncomfortable when like Zemo finally killed him in like Thunderbolts 100. So I was kind of like, oh, that's too bad, like he didn't deserve that. But
it's funny, I guess we'll have arguments later because I always read this series first, so I was more kind of like, well, to me, I always thought that Melissa and Guinness Fell were supposed to be together, and anytime they sort of briefly hinted at that, like, I think, what isn't there like a Thunderbolts issue where he shows up later or something, like and I was like,
yeah,
I think I got excited about that, but I don't think it really led anywhere.
Yeah, he guest appears like a few times between like the 40s and issue 50, I think. So
I love this double page spread that's the title page, like, I mean, I don't know what you guys think about it, but I think it makes Kang look super boss. It's like him on a pile of bodies and blown away, like all these guys charging him, and he's protecting Rick Jones, and the Supreme Intelligence is just in the background hoping he doesn't get a bullet in him. Like, I don't know. I just think it's super cool.
Watch the tank. Watch the tank.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think that's a really cool shot. And boy, I didn't think the Supreme Intelligence's tank was that quite that big, but it looks really cool. Very, you know, just
he's the oversized version of the face of Bo from Doctor Who. Nothing. Nobody.
No, can't help you.
Moisturize me. Moisturize me.
What? You've watched Doctor Who, haven't you?
I've watched Doctor Who. I don't think I have it committed to memory, though.
Maybe if
I looked up the face of Bo, then I would go,
I'm Who ignorant. Yeah.
Well, somebody out there got that, and that was for you.
Moisturize me. Moisturize me.
As soon as they kind of go into battle, they all kind of hit their stride, and, you know, we start to see personality traits come out immediately, including, you know, Cap's indecision, but then we see his super strength. So, you know, it's well planned out, it feels like. You know, we're getting a very quick introduction to the characters. Looking at the page after where they comment about Cap's super strength, the top panel absolutely looks like it's a tribute to Gil Kane, the way it's drawn.
I would imagine also maybe Simonson, because it, like, the source material references, it's from a Simonson Thor issue that's supposed to be the last Viking or whatever. But yeah, I see what you're saying with the Gil Kane as well.
I'm already laughing, like, at this issue, like, when Libra shows up, like, I mean, that guy, like, we said earlier, that robed guy, it turns out to be Libra. And I love, like, Busick is already beginning his, like, this was stupid, so I'm going to change it, like, retcons or whatever. Like,
Moonraker?
Wasp says, weren't you Moonraker? And he was like, no, that was BS. That was, like, Forceworks BS. Like, never mind. Like, go, we're moving on. Like, forget about that stuff. Like,
it, no. It's funny how, like, even people that, I mean, I know it's probably, it's according to your own tastes, right? But it cracks me up that, like, all this stuff is meticulous. meticulously like placed into the story, and it's everything's in it for a reason. And it's like, it's funny, he knows that there's reference in Forceworks to this, but then he's like, nope, that didn't happen. Or at least he's saying like, that wasn't me. So whatever it, like, somebody can still pick it up and run with it and do something with it if they really want to. But all he's saying is it wasn't the original Libra. So I don't know. It just cracks me up. It's funny.
I like when they do stuff like that, because sometimes you get a villain who's got great potential, and then you have some writers who don't treat that character with the respect it deserves. And then if you retcon it out, somehow that's a positive in my mind. I'm thinking of two very significant villains. There was the situation where Thanos was kind of just depowered in some ways to the point where Kazar beat him in a series. And then Jim Starlin wrote something where these were like imperfect clones of
duplicates of them
were out there. And then there was also, you know, a lot of times with Doom, Dr. Doom, where they kind of just didn't make him imposing enough. And then turns out every one of those was a Doom bot. So it's the same thing. I mean, Libra does not hit that level of character that those two do. But, you know, to take what could be an interesting character and mess it up, and then Busiek could just, no. We're gonna write that one off.
Libra's Moonraker, that was a Libra bot.
Moonraker, wasn't me. Oh, we saw you in the forest work. Wasn't me.
I mean, thematically, it kind of works too, because his Libra fits more along the lines of it, like, he cares about balance. Like, he's been studying the Avengers, the whole Father of Mantis thing. Like, I don't know. It like all the continuity that came before, or all the history, as he likes to say, I think, that came before mostly fits with that, except for this one little 90s sidebar where it was like he was dating Spider-Woman and was like a young hip dude in like a parkour outfit, or, you know what I mean? Like, and it's like, well, oh, of course that doesn't fit with the rest of, you know, Libra's character.
They were pruned by the TVA.
Yeah.
I really like the almost splash page. No. There's a group shot.
Oh, is that the one with Hawkeye in the front where he says he elected yourself chairman? Is it that one?
Yes. Okay. Yeah, I think that's a very cool shot with all of them in there.
Yeah, that is pretty cool. I know you've been critical on the style and everything, but since that one specifically stands out, are there things about it that elevate it above your usual reservations for the style, or are you just think it looks super
cool? Just the fact that, first of all, that he managed to lay it out in a way where everybody's represented. I mean, Janice Bell is a little smallish, but otherwise everybody's pretty much, you know, front and center, including even the Wasp, who's Wasp size, but is close enough to give it the perspective of a good portion of the page right in the center. And we don't have any of the facial expressions that bother me in this particular shot.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I agree. I think it's a cool page, and it's wonderfully laid out and everything.
Yeah, Derek, you and I have gone back and forth on your original art collection, which I envy, but I have not tried to mirror.
Every time
this is a page that I would love to own.
Oh, yeah. Every time I see Defenders pages, I'm always thinking of you. But they're even the lowest priced ones, I think, are, you know, still very, very high. So
yeah, and it's such a deep rabbit hole if I start to fall down it.
Well, I may try, because tomorrow it's not that page, but the page where Rick Jones uses the Destiny Force to like drive them away, and it's got a couple panels, but it's the one where Songbird is saying who at the top panel or whatever. That page is up for auction. I haven't looked at it last, but I don't know, maybe I should look at it now and see if it's way out of my range at the moment. But I was planning on maybe trying to bid on that one, because I mean I will again constantly say this though, like that Avengers Forever in general is like my, I mean, when I wrote a top 10 Avengers list of stories, it was like my number one. So like, it's just, that's, you know, again, I'm not going to give it any, you know, poor grades or whatever. So, I mean, if and when I do see pages from this come up, I usually pay attention. I mean, sometimes they're like you're saying, just way the hell out of my price range. But as of right now, it's close. It's about $840 right now. So we'll see what happens. But I may or may not try to bid on it tomorrow. We'll see what happens.
Good luck.
Yeah. I mean, I do like that DPS too, where they break down, you know, for anybody who's not in the know, like who exactly, you know, when Wasp is basically like, okay, I'm the leader, like everybody stop and tell everybody, like, we need to know, like, where exactly are you from? And then they have those kind of thin vertical panels where it's like five vertical panels per page, and it makes up like 10 vertical panels for the DPS or whatever. But I like that way of conveying all the necessary information, but also kind of making it visually interesting, that it's not just some kind of, I don't know, like boring expository, I don't know, task that needs to be done. That there's, you can tell there's something that's fun and exciting about it. You know, the backstory with Hawkeye and how he was at the traveling carnival, you know, kind of reminiscing the Barry Smith issues of Avengers, you know, like that kind of thing, you know, and some of it obviously has like no reference, because Genesvel and Songbird are from the future, you know, or whatever. But it gives you a hint that, like, oh, this is kind of what they're talking about, you know. And you know, I don't know. I enjoy the way that all kind of turned out. I think it's done rather well.
Yeah, I agree. And if, you know, just to continue the original art thought, if they sell these two pages individually, it would be a sin.
Right.
They need to go together. Exactly. I like the fact that Yellow Jacket is playing with his gum as he talks.
Yeah.
It's a nice little character touch.
It's almost like it makes you feel like any of those guys in, like, I don't know, 80s movies, like the guy Brad from like Superman 3 or something, you know, like those guys. It's like they're chewing their gum. It's like some shorthand 101 for he's going to be swarmy or something, like, I guess. I don't know.
I got to remember that next time I'm chewing gum.
Well, I mean, you know, I guess it depends on how you do it, but he certainly has this, like, you know, this lustful look in his eyes when he's doing it.
Lustful and arrogant.
I guess this is something maybe we haven't talked about that may or may not be important. I know we've all seemed to agree that this choice to conglomerate Avengers from all different, like, time periods and have them all come together as a team is interesting, like, dramatically, and it's interesting visually and all this other kind of stuff. I guess, of course, I'm biased. I think I've already answered this. Like, I really like the Genesvel Captain Marvel, but, like, are there any of these characters in particular, or maybe even storylines, that, like, you are rather fond of, I guess, that they're plucking from, or do you just like the combination of all of them into this one storyline?
I like the combination, but I am particularly fond of the Captain America Secret Empire storyline. That was coming out when I first started collecting, so it's got a special place for me.
Do you think that's like, I guess, I don't know, I guess I kind of wanted to get into this because I've seen some criticism of this, you know, trying, to me, it's a positive, but you know, to some people, they'll say, oh, this is continuity porn. You know, like, this is, you know, you have to know your Avengers inside and out to even keep up with this book, or you know, like the kind of judgment towards that. And sometimes I've never seen it that way. Like, I kind of revel in all of this stuff. And even if I was unfamiliar with some of the continuity, it made me long to clean up my own resume rather than blame the story for my lack of knowledge, I guess. But, like, sometimes I wonder if you have that hook that you did, where, like, at least one of these things was a perennial favorite of yours. Like, isn't that hook enough, do you think? Or I don't know. Like, I just think it's interesting.
They explain enough of it that you're not, like, you don't have to know everything, you know.
Right, right.
They tell you, and then, like we said later on, like in the next issue, they're going to tell you where to go and find this if you want to follow up. And it's up to you how deep you want to go. I think they give you enough to anybody out. You get enough to get the gist of the story of each of these characters and where they're at. So
yeah, I think they give it to you and they challenge you to try and find out more.
Much like Starship Troopers. Would you like to know more?
Hawkeye's, well, let's just say Hawkeye's costume is not the best in this, but like when he wears, like, you know, he's got the little poncho that goes along with it.
That's the way it was.
Yeah, like, so that's the cool part, but he needs to put like on a like damn shirt, like, otherwise. But remember,
Derek, the 70s.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, I guess that it was the style at the time to just wear a shirt on your neck and your shoulders, and that's it. Like, but Derek, remember when we were talking about Thunderbolts 22 recently? I think with Hercules and
This is what I was talking about.
Where I was like, oh, there was a point where Hawkeye and Hercules like hung out together, like briefly, like in the after the Kree Skrull War. So like he's directly from that point.
Yeah, it's like if all you need to know is what it tells you here, then great. But it makes it all the more rich if you go back and read like Avengers 99 and see the actual story, right?
Yeah. I'm sure that, and knowing Kurt Busiek, I mean, I'm sure that's totally intentional, like that he's like, hey, I just referenced this, so like I'm gonna use it here too. So
I believe Kurt does his homework.
Oh yeah,
because we're covering, I believe, it's Busiek. It's funny enough, we're doing that long
Kang Dynasty.
Yeah, we're boy, that thing is long.
It is.
Way longer than we thought it was when we started. Because I was like, you know what? I want to do something a little more newer. Of course, it's like 2001, so it wasn't as new as I thought, but I wanted to dig my way out. I wanted to come into the new century with our coverage. I was like, yeah, let's do this. I haven't read this in a long time. Holy crap, this is a lot of issues.
Just as an aside, I'm not sure that the Hawkeye outfit is actually accurate to the time, because that's more similar, I think, to what he was wearing as Goliath during the Kree Skrull War. But then after that, when he went back to being Hawkeye, wasn't he wearing like a blue outfit?
Yeah, it was kind of like purplish, like, or whatever, I guess.
Had like a kilt to it.
Yeah. I mean, I think this is supposed to be him like right after the Kree Skrull War. So it's like, I feel like maybe it's more like they're trying to explain like it's right in between those points, or.
He's just wearing remnants of his Goliath costume, maybe.
I'll take that.
Take the no prize.
Okay, Bill, are we ready?
Sure, Paul. Oh, wait. Be right back. I need my Avengers Omnibus. Where did I put that thing?
Well, Bill looks for that. Let me tell you about our new endeavor. Two True Freaks has grown, and Back to the Bins is growing with it. I, Paul Spataro, along with Bill Robinson and Scott Gardner.
Just say his name three times in an email and he'll appear in your show.
Hey, how's it going?
Sorry. I forgot I had a Scott Gardner life model decoy in here. Be right there. Ow! Ow, who put Cap's shield there?
Anyway, we're looking to showcase various characters, storylines, issues, or whatever strikes our fancy from the world of the Avengers.
Hey, Ben, move that funny-looking hammer, would you? It's on that book, and I can't move it.
Sure thing, Dad. Where do you want it?
Over there somewhere. No! Watch out for the repulsor! Ow! Oh! Ow! Don't tell your mother.
We like to call it Avengers Spotlight.
I thought it was going to be called Old Avengers Never Die. They just get reassembled and sent to another Earth. What? Too wordy?
Who knows what we'll cover, and who might stop by.
So join us for the Avengers Spotlight, where we'll look at Earth's greatest heroes and some of comics' greatest stories, such as the Korvac Saga, Acts of Vengeance, the Kree-Skrull War, and, oh, for the love of Christ, who the hell put the Celestial Madonna Saga on this list?
Huh. I found a use for that life model decoy after all. Okay, found it. We ready? Hey, wait a minute. This is the book of the Vashanti.
Forget it. See you soon, everybody.
My favorite Avengers are D-Man and Green Lantern.
Say goodnight, Scott.
Goodnight, Scott.
So then you guys want to move on to issue 3?
Yeah. I think we're okay.
All right. So again, Avengers Forever, issue 3, cover date February 1999, on sale date December 16th, 1998. I'm realizing that reading all these credits are redundant, so I'm just going to say title, City at the Heart of Forever. Captain America takes Rick Jones.
Rich.
To safety, while the other Avengers join the battle at the Citadel of Chronopolis. Jones convinces the disillusioned Cap to engage in battle, but unsuccessfully attempts to access his Destiny Force powers. The Avengers come upon Kang's Anachronauts, his elite guard made up of the ancestors of the greatest warriors of all time. Wild Run, ancestor of Red Wolf, takes the Avengers to his master Kang. Kang is impressed with the Avengers' honor and tenacity to continue the battle with within the time stream. Kang explains that Immortus seeks to truly change time, not just create a divergent timeline, by harnessing the power of the Heart of Forever, the transchronal engine that allows Chronopolis to exist in every branch of the time stream simultaneously. Kang's armorers provide Rick Jones,
bitch,
a battle chair, and Jones tries to reach out to Jenisvel for some comforting intel from his future. Unfortunately, Jenis cannot even confirm if his future will be the same as Jones's future, much less give them insight into what he vaguely knows from his history as the Destiny War. Eventually, Immortus's invaders return, and Kang fights alongside the Avengers against their next assault. Jones's battle chair gets blasted in the battle, but somehow taps just enough into his Destiny Force abilities to restore his ability to walk. Kang and the Avengers are ultimately forced to retreat from the battlefield. Kang and the army of Chronopolis will hold the line while the Avengers and Rick Jones,
biatch,
try to escape into the time stream with Libra. While our heroes have located Kang's Sphinx, the ice warrior Tempest returns to attack Kang. Immortus himself arrives to claim the Heart of Forever at the Citadel of Chronopolis. Immortus somehow compresses the entirety of Chronopolis directly into the Heart of Forever, reforming the object into what Immortus calls the Forever Crystal. Now with the power to change history and have those reflect the changes throughout the entire history, Immortus is on the verge of total victory. However, Immortus senses that the Avengers have somehow escaped the fusion into the Forever Crystal and vows to find them wherever and whenever they go. Next, running out of time.
Oh, so were the Avengers going to do, like, the fusion with Gohan and Vegeta?
Possibly.
And one more thing. The transcoronal engine. I thought they did Christmas music. Never mind.
Dun, 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 dun. Yeah.
Kang's on the run. Mortis is here. Everyone run.
I need me a battle chair.
I kind of feel like the Anachronauts was another way of, I mean, he may vehemently deny the claim, but I feel like this was a way to wipe out some of the goofiness of that Citizen Kang annual run or whatever from the 90s, because I think that's where those guys come from. So they're like, oh, these guys are lame. They're going to fade from time or whatever. I don't know.
Anachronauts. Do, 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 do. Anachronauts.
Do, 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 do.
There's a lot of rubble in this. Somebody was studied at the feet of George Perez for all the rubble.
Well, yeah, it's interesting. They frequently say that the Avengers run that came, this volume 3, and then Avengers Forever. Like, I was trying to look at, like, any relevant interviews or information about that. And basically what Busick seems to say is Perez wanted to do an Avengers book, and Carlos Pacheco really wanted to do a cool Avengers story. And they both asked for him to be, like, the writer, basically. So, and I was like, I mean, I don't know. I feel like, oh, that's, I feel like that's very self-aware, and like that was like a smart move for both of them to do, you know, because I think it made a winning combination in both cases.
I like the bit where Hawkeye's complaining about like the arrows that Kang's armorers made for him, where he's like, oh, like I'm not gonna, you know, they're too lethal. Like I'm not gonna kill anyone. I feel like you need to like tie up Brian Michael Bendis and show him that panel like over and over again on a loop.
I think of you every time I read this panel, because the next thing I think of immediately is that panel of him going, "We're gonna kill Norman Osborn," or whatever from Bendis's run, uh-huh. And I'm like, oh, like you put these two panels like side by side. It's like two completely different dudes.
So, Paul, what is the cover rank you think of?
I don't know. What are they dancing?
Oh, come on. Think of Apollo Creed and Rocky Balboa. The big painting.
From Rocky III?
Yeah. Ding, ding.
Oh, please.
They're going in to punch each other.
And then Leroy Neiman should have done the cover then.
Are they going to scream for Ravonna at the end of the boxing match?
Ravonna! Speaking of, like, yeah, like, I don't know, like, Carlos Pacheco, like, odd poses. Yeah, that cover of Immortus and Kang tussling. I don't know. It looks kind of off to me. Like, I don't know. Like I get that they're like struggling or whatever, but
I mean, maybe they can be ballroom dancing. I don't know.
Yeah. Like I was going to say, like they're, you know, especially their hands at the top. It's like they're clutching. Well, like
you see, because they're both trying to lead.
Yeah.
I would feel better if there was actually a physical confrontation between them in the book.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, I get it. Yeah, see, look at Immortus's expression. Like, Kang's stepping on his foot.
Ow!
You clawed!
I do like the fact that kind of the city is crumbling around them as they fight.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's supposed to be more, quote-unquote, symbolic cover than actually reflect the specific contents of what occurs within the issue. But I mean, but I still understand the criticism.
It's a metaphorical battle.
Right.
But what's that kind of eagle down at the bottom staring at me, though?
I mean, clearly, yeah, it is part of the Chronopolis city. Some eagle that was...
Oh, yeah. The Sphinx right next to it, too.
Oh, yeah.
Like looking right at you. Yeah.
It's the judging eagle saying...
They're like, these guys are terrible dancers.
We're the judges from Dancing with the Stars. They are terrible.
Yeah, I think, you know, the whole concept of, like, you know, this team of Avengers teaming up with Kang and his entire army to fight an even bigger army is, like, pretty cool. And that, you know, that double page spread of them all fighting is particularly, like, you know, awesome.
I would like for them to give us a little bit more of a background on these Anachronauts. You know, I've always kind of liked the character of Red Wolf. I feel like it was never developed enough. Who is the character that looks like Kazar with the Bloodstone?
I think he's supposed to be an ancestor of the Bloodstones.
Ulysses Bloodstone, whatever.
So, like the idea of the Anachronauts is like they're trying to pick, like, characters, and they may be obscure, like, you know, Bloodstone or Red Wolf. But the idea is these are supposed to be, like, I don't know, Bloodstone's, you know, great, 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 great caveman grandfather that was a great warrior, or, you know, Red Wolf's, you know, great, 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 great grandfather. So plucked from the time stream because he was like the best bowman or the best, I don't know, spearman or, you know, whatever, you know, claim to fame they had as a warrior, I guess.
The splash page of the battle is kind of interesting in its layout. You know, like Cap is drawn very big. Giant Man obviously is drawn giant. But then the perspective, you know, with the angle and all, and then the upper left space being left open, just kind of a very cool perspective.
I mean, sometimes they credit, you know, and probably rightfully so, you know, Brian Hitch, you know, for like cinematic type scale and scope and things like the Ultimates. But I mean, I think this applies too. I mean, I think this is pretty, that spread you're talking about is pretty cinematic, you know, and the way that it curves around and has like these science fiction fighters. But it's kind of like the chaos of everything. Like they're fighting so many people. Hawkeye doesn't even realize he's fighting one of Kang's own, you know, like basically it's like, oh, hey, you're on our side. Do you know what I mean? Like it's like sometimes that's like a joke in like the what the. It's like we got so confused. The Vision and Black Panther were fighting themselves in DC versus Marvel, or what, you know, like they're goofy what the jokes like that. But it's like this is like actually kind of taking that semi-serious, where it's like, oh, we fought one another, but technically we were on the same side. I think this has, I don't know, the speechifying of Kang that I most kind of was getting at when I kind of compared Kang to like a Klingon and Immortus to like he grows up to be a Q, because he's basically like telling them like how he, I guess, you know, feels about the whole thing, where he kind of is ranting about, he calls himself the master of time, fog, you know, he's a gardener of time is more truthful. He prunes away the cronal branches deemed by others to be dangerous, reducing reality to a bloodless meadow. But such is not the way of warriors, of men. I say, let it be a forest, let it be a jungle, let it be something we must strive against and conquer. Whatever comes, fight it, kill it, crush it. That is the mark of the strong Avengers, our mark. You know, like that, I mean, you know, I guess it's not Braveheart, but it's like, he's certainly, I don't know, I think it's a cool, you know, rallying cry speech or whatever. And I like this, not to malign your coverage of Kang Dynasty, but I think when I read this, I think when I was told that there'd be a big arc with Kang, I was hoping for more of this person, you know, like, and I was looking forward to it. And I don't know that that ever was fully realized again or after this, but I do really, really like this interpretation and version of Kang.
And we get another shot like in the first issue with like a cinematic shot with the panels splitting each person in one giant group shot, like we're going from camera to
that it's registering with all of them. Yeah,
we just stared at the pretty pictures
pretty much. I mean I like, that's why I picked my avatar, the one of Genisvel, and then he's kind of reminiscing, or it's got that kind of back after image of his father, you know, and they're kind of going into that. I think Paul said it rather well, you know, living in the shadow of his father, right? And the fact that Rick Jones kind of calling him out, that Rick Jones actually knew his father and doesn't think much of him, it weighs more heavily on him than he cared to admit.
I don't remember. Well, spoilers. I know that Rick Jones is going to get bonded to this version of you know, with him, but are they bonded in this series?
It doesn't technically happen until I don't know. It's kind of spoilery.
Isn't it a reveal later on?
It's kind of like a long game reveal.
Okay.
It's nice that Kang actually, like, you know, compliments the Avengers, like, at the end of that battle, where he's like, it's an honor to have fought by your side. And right. Yeah.
Well, that's why it's one of those things. It's like a Klingon fighting with Kirk and going, oh, you fought with honor. You know, it's like they're not always going to be allies, but it's like, I don't know. There's something like, I guess there's something to me that I think Paul was getting at this earlier, where, you know, sometimes Immortus is an ally to the Avengers and sometimes he's their enemy. Sometimes Kang is, you know, a villain to the Avengers and sometimes he's their ally. But for whatever reason, I feel like there's something just a lot more. I mean, he might be a petulant teenager when compared to Immortus, but there's something that seems like way more straight up about Kang to me. Like, I would trade my toys with Kang and I wouldn't trade my toys with Immortus because he'll probably just go back in time and steal all the toys I traded with him or something.
So we got another good splash page later on. Something I never noticed before is that Hawkeye is using his bow, but he's using it like a club, even though he still has arrows in his quiver. Yeah.
Uh-huh. He's got to save those.
Well, I think it's a combination, right? He's got to save them, but also he doesn't want to blow these people to Kingdom Come because apparently a lot of those arrows are tipped with, you know, explosives.
Said they're good for destroying tanks and stuff, but not so good for fighting individual people. So,
I mean, that at least, I mean, whether or not, you know, I don't know. I'm a firm believer in, I think it's not the end of the world if my superheroes kill people or whatever. But if you're going to adhere to that moral code, I think Hawkeye doing what he's doing there makes me feel like it's a true code and not just something he's talking about. Like, he believes in the conviction of his beliefs, because of course, I don't know. This is my famous go-to, but it's like, okay, Batman doesn't believe in guns, but he's going to run around and throw batarangs that like explode. And I'm just kind of like, I'm pretty sure those do far worse than guns will do. So that's why, at least
they're
in this,
they just not kind of, people unconscious.
Yeah, they're just unconscious. You know, so I'm like, at least
the Pete this. Holmes Batman. Yeah,
yeah.
It almost makes me think of
he's going to sleep.
The Terminator 2 with, you know, he shoots the guy in the knee, he'll live.
Yeah, it's like, oh, except for you've destroyed all his arteries and he'll never walk again, right? Like, that's fine.
When people fight me, they get real sleepy.
When Rick Jones's chair gets blown up, all I can hear is John Travolta. My chair!
Like I said, I need me a battle chair.
I feel like that became a thing because I feel like, you know, he had a battle chair in this and he was wheeling around in Professor X's hover chair in the Future Imperfect and stuff like that. Like that it's just a thing. They want to stick Rick Jones in a hovery chair or something.
Nobody sticks Ricky in a chair.
I know you like saying, you know, Rick Jones bitch and stuff, but like, what do you guys, I mean, I don't know, like, I sometimes I'm always shocked because to me I feel like, oh well, Rick Jones is to me an essential part of Avengers
history. I don't mean he's a bitch. I'm just if
No. That I always took it that way, that you're just having fun. But like, sometimes I guess it's like I've still got post-traumatic stress from all this like snapper car bashing or whatever. And I feel like Rick Jones is the snapper car of the Avengers. So sometimes I wonder, like, do people hate Rick Jones like they hate snapper car or whatever? Or I'm sure
there are people that hate Rick Jones. But, you know, for a long time, he was an integral part of many in the lives of many heroes. I mean, the Hulk, Captain America, Captain Marvel, you know.
I mean, that Captain Marvel book that I said I followed for so long, I mean, that was as much Rick Jones's book as it was Schoenfeld's book. Or maybe in some cases even more lopsided than that, you know? So like, I mean, I guess to me, I've always kind of compared it to, I did a show with Justin a long time ago about DC's robotic Hourman, and in that Hourman and Snapper Carr kind of like the main characters. But if there was any Marvel equivalent to how I feel about that DC book, it would be that 2000 Captain Marvel series. Just that, I don't know what it was. It's just, you know, this kind of like friendship between two characters that you wouldn't think would make it work or get along. Like, you know, they obviously start off bristling each other the wrong way, but sort of, you know, I guess come to love each other like brothers type thing. So, and this is kind of the beginnings of that. Like,
but Rick Jones was pretty much introduced, you know, in the Hulk, obviously, was where he first appeared. And, you know, he was meant to be the Snapper Carr or the Jimmy Olsen, you know, the younger character who the young readers could relate to when they were reading the book. And then, you know, they brought him over to the Avengers and they had him kind of hang out with Captain America for a while. Then they moved him over to Captain Marvel. I was cool with all of it until they made him a rock star. Like, that just kind of...
Okay.
It took him out of the everyman role. It was supposed to be that he was everyman who hung out with superheroes, but now he's a rock star who hangs out with superheroes, and it was just pushing it a little too far, I thought.
Yeah, I guess there's a fine line between being an everyman and being a sort of wish fulfillment character, right? Because that would be my only argument. It's like, I'm sure if I was reading the issues where Rick Jones was a rock star, you know, maybe when I was in my teens, I would have been like, oh, how cool. I wish I was Rick Jones. You know what I mean? Like, I wish I was a rock star, like that kind of thing. But if you're, maybe if you see through that veneer, you're reading it in your 20s or, you know, whatever, kind of going, oh, this is bullshit. Like, how did he get to be a rock star or whatever?
Wasn't he with Rom as well?
Yeah.
He was, yeah.
Just to, you know, for the three issues, I am impressed with the way this is paced so far. I feel like it's all kind of come along very, very well. It's definitely gives me the feeling that it's meant to be read 12 issues in one sitting, if possible. But reading three, you know, three at a time, I'm pretty cool with it. And like I said, I think I perused it when I bought it, but I don't think I ever actually read it panel for panel until I sat down to do it for today.
Oh, wow.
And overall, I'm really enjoying it. So I don't, you know, this is, I call it comic book Alzheimer's because I don't have any recollection as to exactly where the story goes, but I'm looking forward to doing the next three chunks of this one.
Yeah. Yeah. I am too. I mean, I feel like I always bury the lead, but this is one of my favorite Avengers stories of all time, and I couldn't think of anybody better to talk about it with. So I'm glad that you're enjoying, I guess, what your first like really deep dive, sit down, read through rather than perusal of it.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Well, you know, you speak of comic Alzheimer's, and I think you and I talked about this, Paul, in one of our recent things, that there's a guy at work, he's half my age, and he said to me the other day, he's like, you know, you've probably forgotten more about comics than I'll ever learn.
Mm.
And I was like, yeah, probably.
It's always fun. I think Brian once said that to someone else, one of our former podcast buddies, but there were some arguments on some message board, and I think it was said in defense of me, and he was like yelling at some other guy going, Derek's forgotten more about comics than you'll ever know. And I'm just kind of like, it cracks me up because like sometimes that's the case.
Yeah, my friend is playing Spider-Man 2 on his Sony PlayStation, and he keeps like, so what's up with this guy? What's up with Kraven? What's up with... And I'm like, well, this is da-da-da-da-da-da. That is, you know, and he's texting me. So, you know, I'm an old man, so texting is kind of like... Finally, I'll just say, look, just ask me tomorrow at work. I don't have time to sit here and keep texting. I'm old, damn it.
Like, see, this Kraven guy, he's going to get a movie, and I'm sure it's going to do great.
Yeah. The death of the Sony universe.
Rad. Well, I mean, I think unless we have any other final thoughts on this three-issue chunk, I think we'll call it a rousing success as far as our coverage of the first installment of Avengers Forever. And again, the plan as it moves forward is to do these in three-issue chunks. And then hopefully after four podcasts, you'll be able to hear our thoughts on the entire saga. I guess we should go around and do the, you know, kind of where people can find our various endeavors, right? If we want to talk about Avenger Spotlight and Back to the Bins and stuff like that. So do you guys want to point anybody in a certain direction as far as that goes?
Well, sure. Avenger Spotlight is pretty much a subset of Back to the Bins. It's part of the Back to the Bins podcast, just with a specific topic. Right now, you know, you can find us on the Two True Freaks Network or at twotruefreaks.com. We are currently having some issues that were not available on iTunes for some reason, and I'm not even sure about other podcatchers, but hopefully that'll get worked out. But certainly, again, twotruefreaks.com is where you could find us.
And then for Mike and myself, you can find all the episodes of Justice Not Entirely Dissimilar to Lightning over on the fanholespodcast.blogspot.com. And of course, you can find us at the usual places. We can be streamed on Podbean. We are on social media, X, Tumblr, Facebook, Instagram. We appreciate all the likes, hearts, shares, and retweets that we receive. So I guess until the next time, this will be Derek WC. I'm going to be signing off.
Hey, it's Mike. I guess I'm going to try to wear a shirt that stops at my neck.
It's Paul, and you're bye-bye, Paul, everybody.
Bill, right?
Yeah, Paul. You are Bill. I checked you.
Okay, all right. But I'm a Bill who's lost the ability to be podcasting. Woozy, woozy.
Got a lot of self-doubt after you saw Huckleberry Hound take advantage of his public office.
After Huckleberry Hound shot himself.
Oh, my darling. Huckleberry Hound.
Thank you so much for listening to our show, and we hope you'll continue to join us each and every week for more good old-fashioned comic book back issue awesomeness. You can contact Back to the Bins to leave feedback, comments, questions, suggestions, and criticisms via email at bins@twotruefreaks.com or by joining the Back to the Bins group on Facebook. Back to the Bins is a proud affiliate of the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Network, which you may find at www.twotruefreaks.com. Two True Freaks is a registered trademark of DiManzo Corp of Milan, Italy. All rights reserved. Please take a moment to stop by the twotruefreaks.com site and check out their many other fine podcasts, won't you? Thanks, and we'll see you next week.
Well, I don't know if grading them, because, I mean, they're all pretty damn good, so I don't think...
I mean, nice. I think my thing was going to be like, it's all A's for me. I like these.
Yeah.
All right, so I guess I'll bring us in, and then...
quick story.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a guy at work. I don't know if I told you the story or if you heard it before. There's a guy that runs the air conditioning department at the VA, and his name is Rich James. and I just every time, Rich James is going to speak, and I'm like,
You can't help yourself. Hand around your mouth or whatever.
Punch me as soon as I open my mouth.
That's like me. I would get all giddy because there'd be like, I would occasionally during my tenure as an employee of the county, I'd get calls from like the sheriff's office and things like that. And I'd get all excited when like Captain Gary Mitchell would call me up or whatever, you know, like shit like that, where it's like, holy crap, Gary Mitchell's calling me up. This is awesome. Yes. Like, so, yeah. So